The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. Live from the Progenerator Chamber, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it
now.
Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy, celebrating its 25th year, presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 195. This is Louis Trapani, and this is part two of our live review of Victory of the Daleks. Once again, as I said in our previous show, if you have not seen Victory of the Daleks yet, this is episode 3 of the Matt Smith series, a new series of Doctor Who. So if you have not seen this yet, please take this podcast and put it in your pocket or deposit it in the bank and withdraw it once you have, and then play it. Well, we're going to go right into our live show because there's a lot to cover. We had a tremendous turnout for our live show for this episode, so we had to break it up into two parts, and this is the second of the two. And if you haven't heard episode 194, which is our review of Victory of the Daleks, where both Ken, James, and I review it, as well as a few others, some of our Podshock supporting subscribers, please go back and listen to 194 before listening to this, because we pick up where we left off there. We have live feedback with comments about Victory of the Daleks. So let's go right back into the show, and at this point, Dave A.C. Cooper is helping me out with hosting duties, so let's go to me and Dave back to our live show, recorded on the 17th of April, 2010.
All sorts of Danny Boy, target the dish and stop that signal. Over.
Good luck down, sir, and the dish seems to be protected. Over.
Shields intact, pulse still active.
Danny Boy's the Doctor. Only me left now. Anything you can do, sir? Over.
I can disrupt the Dalek shield, but not for long. Over.
Energy pulse destroyed!
Darren Pinsir!
The Doctor to Danny Boy, the Doctor to Danny Boy. Destroy this ship! Over!
Attack.
What? I let you scuttle off back to the future, no fear.
All of the attack, or we will destroy the Earth.
I'm not stupid, mate. You've just played your last card.
Bracewell is a bomb.
You're bluffing.
His power is derived from an oblivion continuum. Has failed. His compassion is his greatest weakness.
There's an oblivion continuum inside you, a captured wormhole that provides perpetual power. Detonate that and the Earth will bleed through into another dimension. They cannot explode that bomb because you're a human being. You are flesh and blood. They cannot explode that bomb.
Oblivion continuum inactive.
Now, gotta stop them, stop the Daleks.
Wait, Doctor, wait. It's too late.
You will never defeat us, Doctor. We will return.
They've gone.
Doctor, it's okay. You did it. You stopped the bomb. Doctor?
I had a choice. I knew I'd choose the Earth. The Daleks have won. They beat me, they've won.
But you saved the Earth. Not too shabby, is it?
No, it's not too shabby.
It's a brilliant achievement, my dear friend. Here, have a cigar.
No,
you have enemies then. And here's me thinking we'd just be running through time, being daft and fixing stuff.
Something we've forgotten, or rather you have.
Me?
You didn't know them, Amy. You'd never seen them before, and you should have done. You should.
Let's get back to the queue. We have a lot of people in the queue there. So now let's see. I think the next one up will be, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Darth Skeptical. I don't know if we have any other Podshock supporting subscribers in the queue. And if you'd like to become one, go to our website, thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net, and you'll see a banner on the top, and you can click on that, and that will give you more information. It's because of our Doctor Who Podshock supporting subscribers that we're able to do this show and bring it to you. So we're much appreciated to them. Mr. Darth Skeptical, are you there?
Hello, good sir.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing very well indeed. Especially after this episode, because I think, in comparison to last week's, it was a massive, massive improvement. Now, it's weird, because, as we've just been discussing there, it does have a lot of, you know, WTF moments in it. There certainly are things that don't quite make sense in terms of the technology that's being used, or how certain things happen, or whatever. But the overall narrative structure of it is pretty sound. Unlike last week, where at the core of the episode, there is, I think, a problem that simply can't be resolved. Here, at least, you know, you move from point A to point B to point C, and it's like generally the whole thing kind of hangs together. Mm-hmm. Not the greatest episode in the world, obviously, but I think you've made a very good analogy there. It is like a roller coaster ride. And, you know, roller coaster rides are fun and unnecessary and frivolous, and they don't really have a whole lot to do with logic. They have a lot to do with gravity, I suppose, but not really. You know, you're not going there for an educational tour. Yeah. You know, if this does, as Mark Gatiss hopes on the Confidential, introduce some kids to the ideas and concepts of World War II, that's great. I don't think it's as strong at doing that as Moffat's World War II entry from Series 1, but still, you know, it might be a little bit of sugar before the medicine goes down. I don't have really that many problems with, you know, the big topic of discussion, which is the redesign of the Daleks. I think that that's actually quite glorious and, you know, references not only the 60s movies. And by the way, we haven't really talked about the precise design of the 60s movies Daleks. It's not just that they're colored. They actually, too, are chunky. They actually do have some slope on the back. Some junk in the trunk, if you will.
They're on risers. Yeah. They're higher. They're like on platforms. If you look at their feet, if you want to call it, or the bottom of the Dalek.
Right. Right. But the overall shape is closer to being that movie Dalek, and it's not just the color. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really quite a slight thing if you think about it. It's the addition of one more panel on the back, which isn't such a big deal. And it's interesting. I don't know what that might be used for, but it does look like there's like a hook back
there.
Yeah, I noticed there's
some instrument or something back there, as you said.
I thought it was just an air vent for the operators. Sorry, guys, there are operators.
Well, maybe, you know, and, you know, considering them, it's certainly probably better for them, this design, because it probably has more room. But that little thing at the back, who knows, maybe it's their tow cable now or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a fine design, and I love the color, the fact that there is a hierarchy that's implied by that, so that maybe we're going to actually get some interesting dialogue between Daleks that maybe we wouldn't have gotten before.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, you know, I don't want to be a red Dalek then. They're the ones who get shot.
Well, it is weird. You know, that is a very interesting design that's parallel to sort of the Star Trek red, you know, because red had moved from the old series being, you know, the grunts to being, you know, command executive structure in Next Generation and beyond. And what's interesting with the Daleks is that red in the past, and certainly in like the TV-21 comics and even as recently as Journey's End, red meant I'm the leader. Now it means I am, you know, the one that's getting killed this episode. So it's interesting how red is used in both Star Trek and Doctor Who. But I think this episode worked for me a lot better because it had some genuine emotional content that was delivered in a way that made a lot of sense. Matt Smith's anger in this episode is glorious in a way that it wasn't last week at all. And it's because he's given a lot more to work with. He's given a script that gives him a reason to be angry. I love the fact that he just barks at Amy at the very top of the episode to get her to shut up when she's saying things that are irrelevant. It's very First Doctor-ish, kind of. Mm-hmm. His anger in this is just fantastic. And at the same time, Amy's reaction to all that, Amy doesn't get a lot of dialogue, really, except sort of more towards the end. She gets a lot of reaction shot time, and she does amazing. Karen Gillan did some really, really good, smart things that really sold Matt Smith's anger. Her reaction shots are just really outstanding. Yeah, quite outstanding at selling the anger of Matt Smith and the danger of that anger.
Even at the end where she's working out what the doctor's doing, trying to elicit emotions from the inventor. I can't remember his name, but you could
see Bracewell,
they would just show shots of her, and she's not saying anything, but you could see it in her face that she's working out what the doctor's doing, and then it clicks on her. You know, she makes the connection and says, no, I could go one better. And then she comes in.
Right. That's quite true. And I think this is Karen Gillan's best outing so far, really. Even though, again, she's not that pivotal until the very end. So there's a lot of good stuff going on there. The things that I really don't like about this episode are sort of behind-the-scenes production kind of things. Like, I think that people's problems with the sheen, the exact brilliance of the colors of the Daleks, making them look maybe a little bit more plastic than metal, that has everything to do with the cinematographer. And, of course, this season we're going through cinematographers at about the rate of one every two episodes. It's not like it was in the past where we only had two cinematographers, you know, Rory Taylor and Ernie Vincenz, and they did everything in the past. Now we've got a new cinematographer almost every week, and I just didn't like this guy's work.
Because a lot of it could be affected by that, lighting as well, and you know, and
exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. His lighting plan, especially in that Dalek ship, I think was quite ordinary, quite flat, quite horizontally lit instead of vertically lit. I just really didn't like what he was doing at all there. And I also didn't really like what Murray Gold was doing in a lot of places either, because I think he was searching around for a musical motif that wasn't original. I think especially that dog fight scene. That dog fight scene should have been absolutely one of the best things that's ever happened in Doctor Who, because in concept it really is. But the music that he underscores it with is Boy's Own Adventure. It's very, you know, World War II propaganda film. Let's bring out, you know, the fanfares, and, you know, it's very cliched. It's very typical. He should have gone with fewer instruments, with just something that was completely against what the episode was, the setting of the episode. I think by his music in this episode turns away some of the grittiness of World War II, and it could have really been used to make that more powerful. And he just failed, I think, except for maybe the whole last bit. He does some wondrous things in the last 10 to 15 minutes and some great stuff at the very, very beginning. But in the middle, the bulk of the episode, I just think he just is all over the place and really trying to just make it just doesn't work for me, his music in this episode, which is, you know, it's a weird thing I'm finding now about Murray Gold. Before, he was like completely unassailable, I think, you know, in the first few seasons. But now it's like very episodic for me. I loved what he did in 11th Hour. Didn't like this. I didn't like what he did in the Mars episode. But I did like what he did in End of Time. It's weird. I'm having
I didn't have a problem with his music this time around. I thought, I mean, as you said, it was very thematic to the theme of World War II, and I think that was just capturing the flavor of that theme.
Yeah, but see, to me, I think that I understand what he was trying to do, and I think he achieved what he was trying to do, but I think what he was trying to achieve was wrong. I think he should have gone against, should have let the visuals speak for the setting, and then he should be using his music to underscore the emotion. Like I think he was trying to do a visual thing with his music and trying to paint the picture of World War II. And I think he should have instead been trying to paint the picture of the emotion of the doctor, the emotion of the pilot, you know, and it just kind of didn't work for me. I'm sorry, Dave, I cut you off.
No, I was going to say the middle bit of the music, the the sort of tension bit works because I assume there's going to be a lot of running down corridors, but it takes a long time to break into the actual 8-bar movement or whatever musicians call it when the actual theme really explodes. I actually, when I listen to it now, I actually like the music at the end of the show rather than the opening section because there seems to be more musicality in that.
That's from the very first time I heard it, I've really taken to the new theme. So that part of it, you know, I don't fault him for it all. I don't know that I prefer the opening to the closing. They're both really good rearrangements of the theme to me. Yeah, so there's that. There's also, you know, some stuff with the editing in that the editing's really sloppy this season. Every single episode, you can really tell from the very first viewing, not from rewatching it, but you can really tell that different takes of the scene have been edited together and that people's arm position or that people's body position are different in the different takes. And it's very... Yeah, exactly. Just the simple editing continuity is really quite off this season. And again, you have plenty of examples throughout this episode. Noticeably, if you haven't noticed it, and I frankly can't see how you wouldn't, but if you haven't noticed it, look again at the sequence where Amy and the doctor are talking to the android at the very end where he's deciding whether or not he can run away or not. Just look at the difference between the frontal shots of Matt Smith and the shots over shoulder shots of Matt Smith looking
at
the
Smith
android.
Doesn't help either. I mean, I think Matt Smith is great, and he's very animated. He's very fluid, and he's not one to stand still. And I think probably that plays havoc with the editing.
I was thinking that too. That you know, his hand movement, which I think most of us adore, must be a nightmare. Must be. So maybe it's not possible for the editor to match the scenes, but it's not just scenes that involve Matt, but more that than not.
When the TARDIS disappeared, that wasn't handled very well. I mean, the idea was I thought Churchill smoking a cigar was supposed to show the fantastic effect that they were in the same room as the TARDIS when it disappeared. You know, they hadn't cut the frame. But it looked as though when you saw Churchill head on, his cigar actually wasn't really lit. Basically, the smoke almost has been CGI'd in. But it didn't seem to work. It was a bit elongated, the scene, and it didn't really work, I don't think.
Well, that certainly is another example. And I'm not terribly – I'm not overly fond of Andrew Gunn as a director either. I've not – found anything in either of his two episodes here where I've been like, oh, you're the next Uris Lynn, or even you're the next Adam Smith. He's been at times, it's sort of I don't know, his shot composition, honestly, if you think about it, that whole thing of the new Daleks being revealed, he does that with a simple dolly back and forth, and it's really – he could have done so much more with that. He should have done some really low-angle shots, some really high-angle shots. He should have done more of a crane movement if he could. He's okay. It's competent enough, but he's kind of Keith Boak-like, Keith Boak being, of course, the director of Rose that they never used again, really. So
I think there were certain limitations because of the low ceiling, wherever – location they had to be
right.
Had some restrictions, but I guess different angles, and, you know, there's different possibilities.
Just sort of unimaginative, especially, I mean, really, if you take a look at the direction of the 11th hour and you compare it to this, you'll be like, wow, there is really quite the difference in the way that the camera moves and the way that camera doesn't move.
They set the bar high with that first one, didn't they?
Yeah, like Adam Smith certainly was happy to go in for close shots and just leave them there until you got a real sense of what was going on. I think that he's part of the reason that Caitlin Blackwood's performance as Amelia was so extraordinary, because he had absolute faith in his actors and just stayed on their faces when needed to. And then in other shots, he's completely animated with the camera. So I'm glad that we're sort of at the, I think we're at the end of the Andrew Gunn run. I know he doesn't do the next two, so I'm excited to get a new director in. But overall, this is such an improvement over last week, and it's not necessarily one of the best Dalek stories ever made, but it's certainly
a fun one.
It's certainly not it's certainly not Destiny of the Daleks. It's certainly not Remembrance of the Daleks. It's a strong start.
Oh, really? Was this in that Dalek with something? Might not be the baseball bat, but still.
Don't even remember it. Even the name of
you
Remembrance is a terrible. But this is a great place to start telling Dalek stories from again. I'm excited to see the return of these particular Daleks. Probably even more than I was to see this particular episode. It does end on quite the cliffhanger. And it really is the first time that this is truly a victory for the Daleks. I mean, really, an unambiguous victory for the Daleks over the Doctor. And the title's very clever and plays nicely with that, because you're thinking, oh, okay, this victory, that means, you know, World War II, but really it actually does mean a true victory. And that's an interesting way to end a Dalek episode. I don't really like Mark Gatiss as a writer that much. I haven't enjoyed his offerings before, but certainly of his offerings, I think this is the best for me.
So how many TARDIS points would you give us?
I would go along with you. I would give it a 4.
Okay.
Might go lower as we get into maybe better episodes as we go along, but this is certainly way better than last week, and it's fine. It's fine where we are right now in the series.
Fantastic. Okay, well, thank you once again, Doth. There's a lot of people in the queue, so I do want to move along, but thank you.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Cheers. All right, next up is none other than Sam from, I don't know if she's down under or she's still on the road.
Oh, she's in the UK?
She's still in the UK then.
Yeah.
Hello, boys.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hi, good, thanks. And to answer your question, I am now in London, so I'm not down under anymore. Not till October.
Wow, this is a long tour for you.
Yeah, it is. Oh, dear.
That's fantastic for you.
What can I say? It is. It's both good and bad.
You're homesick a little?
It's fantastic company, but it's bad. I'm a bit homesick and I'm a bit poor because I don't have a job, so I can't really travel, and it's a bit but other than that, it's exciting.
But you see Doctor Who as it airs.
Yeah, I've been loving that. I went to a convention last weekend, and next weekend I'm hoping to go to a convention, volcano permitting. So, it's going to be good. So, Victory of the Daleks. Oh, dear. I enjoyed it. It's plot-holtastic, but what episode of Doctor Who isn't these days? Oh, dear, my mind's just gone blank.
You wanted a pink Dalek. That's what I remember you saying.
Oh, yeah. Well, when the Daleks came out, like, of the, you know, we saw the colourful Daleks, because I wasn't expecting them to be, you know, like that, because I'd seen the radio times, but I thought it was, you know, Photoshop to do with the election. So I'm going, okay, I honestly didn't think that it was, you know, going to be that. So I was quite, you know, oh, new Daleks. And I was generally thrilled, but I remember I was sitting here with my friend, Ebony, who was watching it with me, and she just said, where's the pink Dalek? We were calling them Clear Daleks, they're Out and Proud, or Power Rangers, or the Skittles. They're like Skittles Daleks, so they're a bit colourful, but honestly, don't have much of a problem with them, really. They're fine.
Yeah, can I ask you, Romana, because Lewis said right at the beginning about the Radio Times spoiling it. You were, I think, a little bit like me, because it was a political front cover on the Radio Times, and they were using the colours of the political parties. So I didn't make the connection with the show. I don't know about yourself.
I didn't know that the different political parties have different colours in this country, because I have no idea. But I just thought they were just Photoshop just to be three different colours, because, you know, three different colours, we can do three different covers, and, you know, it's like, collectible stuff. I assumed they were just just like a kind of merchandising kind of promotional thing.
But see, the thing is that they went out of their way not to show the new Daleks in any of the trailers or, you know, the leading up to the story. And then the Radio Times goes and spoils it. And that whole big reveal is like, oh, well, you know, I've already seen these already. They were all over the Internet.
I honestly...
But I didn't connect them with the show. That's what I'm trying to say, Lewis.
I didn't connect
yeah, but even
them at all.
Still, even if they'd taken color out of the equation, you still knew that there was going to be a new Dalek coming.
No. I didn't even know they were going to be in the episode.
Know.
Oh, all right.
I thought they were. You see, in the UK, nearly every program you see, housing programs, they say, oh, this house is like a TARDIS. There's lots of Doctor Who references. So I thought they'd just take a humorous slant on the election, and each of the Daleks had been in the colour of one of the political parties, because there was a feature about Doctor Who inside the magazine, but it never occurred, well, I'm thick, obviously, it never occurred to me, it didn't spoil it for me this time, not like the Manlik did way back when.
I was the same. I didn't connect it at all. But yeah, what else? Oh dear! I've only seen this once, and my mind's a bit hazy. It's a bit getting a bit late.
Well, what about Amy? And what about Matt?
Matt's amazing as per usual. Just he's like Darth was saying, his anger. Love that. It was just he seemed.
So Sam, more, we're three episodes in.
I'm sorry.
I was just saying we're three episodes in. I know you are a big David Tennant fan. How are you warming up to Matt Smith?
Well, I'm amazed. I'm in love with Matt Smith already. It's almost David Who, as much as I love him, and happy birthday, by the way, David. Throwing confetti and knickers your way. I love Matt Smith so much, and I'm honestly watching him and thinking, yes, he's a doctor, and I'm really not missing Matt David Tennant, amazingly. But still, you know, I think if I hadn't liked the doctor that came in, and, you know, if for example, this was Christopher Eccleston coming in right now, because I'm not a big fan of him, if he was came in now, I probably would be missing David a lot more. But because I love Matt and I'm loving Karen, and I'm loving them as a doctor and companion, and I'm loving what Steven's doing, and I'm really not missing him. And I never thought I'd say that. So in their old way, I feel like it's great so far. But again, this story's not perfect, but what story is, basically, I forgive the wibbly science for Spitfires in space. I thought that image of that was just so cool. And yeah, really, that's about it. I love the World War II setting as well. A lot of my favourite stories from both Doctor Who and Torchwood have been set around the World War II period, and I love that period. I love the fashion, I love the style, I love the themes, the whole period. Love it. So,
how many TARDIS groans?
Yeah, I like this. TARDIS groans. I'd say 4, depending on a rewatch and later pacing in the series, because there could be stories coming up that are going to be even more amazing. So, but at the moment, I enjoyed it enough. We all had fun watching it. My friends came over here and we watched it on the telly as it was going out, and we enjoyed it highly.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, 4 at the moment, yeah.
All right.
That's where my brain's letting me say
right.
it.
Thank you so much,
really
Sam. So, 4,
no worries.
4 out of 5. Okay, thanks again.
4 out of 5.
Cheers.
Yep. No worries. Cheers. See ya.
Bye.
All right, we still got a lot of people in the queue, and we're already an hour and 40 minutes into it, so let's try to get as many people as we can in. So next up is Russell. Not Syl, but Russell.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you. This is a very interesting episode. I thought as the Doctor, Matt Smith, he really got into the role more. And personally, it was nice to see Amy in something besides a nightshirt. So, yay for her finding new clothes. Overall, a lot of people are commenting on the new Dalek design. And yeah, I mean, I found it very symbolic. I don't know if Stephen Moffat meant it this way, that his Daleks destroyed the old ones, kind of like saying, take that, RTD era Daleks, you're done. Usher in the new.
Well, I think he is reinventing the series just as Russell T. Davies did in 2005. So I think that's just his his way of, you know, instead of, you know, all of a sudden introducing new Daleks without an explanation of what happened to the old ones, I think this was how he did it.
Yeah, but they went just obliterated the old ones. So that was, I don't know, to me, sending out a little bit of a message saying, you know, my show now. Bye-bye. That's just me. Overall, I thought the planet in space was kind of hokey, you know, considering scientifically, you know, how do propellers work in no atmosphere? That was a little off to me, but you kind of let that go.
Yeah, I assume that this hypersonic flight thing that he mentioned, right? I mean, it was very too brief, really. Because you need to watch the show a second time, and we've said, and I've said this before, certainly, you shouldn't have to rely on second. I mean, rewatchability is great, but you shouldn't have to rely on it to catch the story. I mean, I know we used to have to listen to David Tennant sometimes because the lines he would deliver so quickly, you had to almost watch it again to what was that? But I think it was the hypersonic flight. But they didn't show anything on like the front of the aircraft to reinforce that they'd done something both to that as well as encapsulated. And actually, when I watched it on high definition, by the way, you did see a very very faint outer green shell. And if you're a very fan of the old War of the Worlds 1953 version, where they had like this dome affair appear over the creatures, you just occasionally saw a little glimpse of that on the high definition.
I mean, other than that, I mean, that's just a little scientific-y thing. I thought the Doctor's rage against the Daleks was really nice to see, and to see them stalling him with something to get on off and see, to say, nope, we're just going to go the line. I thought that was different. I mean, obviously, we'll see them again later on in the series. That pretty much goes without saying. And they still seem to be following this formula, just like in Series 1 of RTD. We have, you know, second episode is space. Third episode is a trip to the past to see a historic figure. And the upcoming fourth and fifth are going to be two-parters, just like the first season of RTD. So I don't know if this is something the BBC has said, you have to do it this way. But coincidentally, it just seems kind of strange that they're falling into that pattern, really. I don't know why that's the case. I would love to ask Moffat that. Is this your decision or the BBC's decision how to structure the story?
Yeah, I would suspect it's not the BBC. I'm sure maybe they feel they have something that works and why tinker with it? Maybe, I don't know. I can't speak on behalf of Stephen Moffat, but... Or yeah. He may just say,
and of course,
there's no pattern. There's no. We're just doing what we're doing.
I'm just wondering how far this pattern's going to go, because I'm looking at, so far, and up to the fifth season, we're seeing a mirror of season one of RTD, so how far this mirror goes, I don't know. We get the crack again at the end of the episode, so I'm thinking every episode we're going to have a crack reference.
Yeah, as long as we don't see a refrigerator repairman bending down and revealing a crack that way, we should be okay.
No, that would go almost to the Love of Monsters way.
Please. All right. Well, how many TARDIS groans would you give this?
I'm only going to give this a 3, really. Just enough little things. I think Matt Smith's performance is improving. I just think the story could have been better. And them leaving the android to go on your merry way and then destroying the stuff in the planes was kind of contradictory. So that didn't make a heck of a lot of sense.
Yeah, I guess maybe because they felt that the android was some sort of, you know, achieved a sentience, you know, was a sentient life form at this point. They, you know.
Yeah, but you might as well have left the parts in the plane then for all the... It's the same thing. You're leaving alien technology running rampant in a timeline it shouldn't be, so...
Well, we'll see. Maybe they have plans for him in the future.
Oh, wouldn't be surprising me if the good one-handed doctor android boy shows up again. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
All right, well, thank you, Russell.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Okay. Cheers.
And next up is Robert. Welcome back.
Hey.
How are you?
I was thinking, since everybody... Oh, I'm doing fine, Lewis. Hello, everybody. I was thinking, since everybody was talking about a certain show, comparing it to the Daleks, I was thinking about this. Okay, that's enough of that.
What was that from? It's one of those Saturday morning
who can guess
shows.
Outrageous, was it? Yeah.
Well, I'm doing fine, guys. I just don't know about this episode. I like the Daleks, and I like Cybermen and everything, but watching this, it feels like a live-action cartoon. It's like, you know, you open up a comic book, and this is what this whole episode felt like, or the story felt like to me. It's just, you know, a live-action comic. I like the gentleman that portrayed Churchill. I think he is pretty good. The scene where we finally discover the scientist and he is the android kind of gave me a reminder of Chameleon back in The King's Demon during the Peter Davison era or so. And I thought it was kind of interesting. I thought Doctor didn't leave alien technology behind. I thought that was Torchwood collecting, but how can you guarantee that he's not going to get mad? You know, like the Hulk, don't get mad. And decides to blow things up, so...
Who knows, he may be working for Torchwood.
It turns into the Iron Man, I believe.
Oh, yeah, for Iron Man 2. The new Tony Stark. Anyway, I was okay with this. I you know... There was just some things about it that I just wasn't crazy about it. One of the things I brought up in an earlier show with Dave and everybody there at Coldham Collective was the story arc situation. I understand, and Romana pointed out to me that, you know, that's what people want today, to build up characters and stuff like that. But I mean, can't we, even just in the series itself, have a couple of standalone episodes where it's not associated with the arc? I mean, there's nothing wrong with having an arc in a series. That's fine. But, I mean, I would have liked it if it would have been maybe, you know, two or three stories later. Or, you know, finish up the arc in episode 8 or 9 and just go to individual till you get to the end of the 12 and 13. You know, that's just the way I feel about it. But, you know, I understand. I'm not 18 anymore, and, you know,
I look at things differently. Heavy-handed. You know, it's, if we go back to, I don't know if it was every episode had in the first 2005 series, if it was if Bad Wolf showed up in every episode. It might have missed a few, but still it was there. Mm-hmm. Even like Torchwood, the reference you know, leading up to that, and in the, you know, the next series, and Vote Saxon, and, you know, it doesn't have to be in every single episode. And I think obviously there was sometimes that they weren't on Earth that they couldn't use the Vote Saxon one, and so Taras says they missed one episode with the Bad Wolf.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, even in the classic series, they did do story arcs in that. The Key to Time, the Black Guardian trilogy, the Ark in Space. I mean, yes, but I mean, there were times too where they did some individual ones. The Genesis of the Dalek was an individual episode. Didn't really have any arc to that because then it went on to a different story after that. I'm just saying that's what I like to see more of. But I mean, I'm still happy with the story. I mean, I did enjoy it. I would watch it again. But just a few minor things, the biplanes or the airplanes in space kind of threw me off. And as I was telling Dave, I felt lost in this episode. And it's not a good loss. It's a loss, like a non-understanding comprehension situation with this episode, which is very weird. I mean, I didn't have that much during the last 4 years. And for what I'm doing Wednesday with Graham, me and him are reviewing the specials. So now I'm back to beginning rewatching The Next Doctor and them. So, but...
Well, what part of this episode, was there any particular part that you felt you weren't following?
I think you meant the space battle, was it?
Well, yeah, it's not the whole story itself. It's just certain points in the story where, for the connection with the Daleks, I was thinking more along the lines of the Daleks in Manhattan. Maybe some Daleks were missed in that episode. But then it was pointed out it was Journey's End connection to the Daleks with this one. So I understood that. If I could accept it as not our Earth time, but maybe as a parallel Earth time, with the situation with the Daleks, the point that Amy couldn't remember any of it, maybe being in space and time with the Doctor, maybe she wouldn't. I don't know.
Well, we still have to see how that pans out. I think it has to relate to going back to the first episode, the 11th hour, you know, where it was mentioned that it was there were cracks in time and space, so that emphasis on time, you know, that this could be just something had to do messing up the timeline.
Yeah. Well, I say, Andrew, I better think is happy thoughts then if it don't want to explode.
Well, I think that is disengaged now unless something engages it, you know, and which the Daleks, I assume, could come back and start it up again.
Yeah.
Right, we've got a couple more to get to, Robert.
Well, I'm out here. I just wanted to say I'm glad that we're done. Maybe the Daleks will be away till next series. It has to be the thing where the Daleks always meet the new Doctor. It's inevitable, but I give it a 3 out of 5 on this.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Robert.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. You guys take it easy now. Cheers.
All right, and moving along, because we are pushing 2 hours now. This is probably going to be broken up into 2 episodes at this rate. So next up is our long friend here, Mr. Charas, who's a Doctor Who Podshock contributor.
Hello, Lewis.
Welcome back. It's been a long time.
Hi, Charas. Yeah.
Yeah, I just missed out on the first episode. I missed the cutoff.
Yeah, well, that was... I had to rush off on that one.
You had to leave, yeah. So, first off, I really like the way Gatiss has been writing his Doctor Who episodes. It's just that his stories seem to be not as strong as some of the others, but that may or may not be his fault. Like, for example, the Spitfires scene, that was something that Moffat asked him to put into it, so...
Mm-hmm.
It seems like something that was like tacked on at the last minute, and that's kind of obvious, which is kind of why some people feel that there's some issues with, oh, how did they get this so fast or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But one can assume that Bracewell being an android with all the Dalek technology could whip something up pretty quickly. So
yeah, that's what we have to
that could be an
surmise,
explanation.
No.
Yeah, that's how I suspended my disbelief.
He just went in hyper mode and built them very quickly.
Right, and the line that Amy uses, Oi Churchill, John R.B. on the DWNY forums pointed out that that's a line from a commercial for Churchill car insurance.
Oh.
That has this
did not know that.
Bulldog,
I hope that was accidental.
So I thought that
placement
was funny.
In Doctor Who, who'd have ever thunk it?
Yeah.
Anyone who wants to buy some Jammy Dodgers?
So
that was a brilliant scene where he just like has the Daleks off balance, and what somebody was alluding to earlier, they didn't understand why the Daleks weren't recognized by the progenitor, and that's if we remember, these Daleks are based on human DNA partially.
And even they hated themselves, that's why they didn't object to being oblivious.
I think Darth might take issue with that, because as somebody said, the episode they were from, there were ones where they were taken from Davros's own body.
Yeah.
You know, where Davros lifts his shirt up and he said they use cells from his own body. But they're still, you could argue if these are very early, you know, they've been in this vessel for, you know, 1,000 years or whatever, they would perhaps not recognize them because of all the different evolutions that have happened to the Daleks.
Yeah.
But it's a bit timey-wimey, mixy-uppy.
Yeah, watching it, I assume it was the human factor, you know, that was involved.
That's what I thought, but...
Now, one thing that I remember, there's a lot of issues going on about things not making sense, like Amy not knowing about the Daleks and things like that. If we remember, the first thing that Stephen Moffat ever wrote for Doctor Who was in, I think, Decalogue 3, a little short story called Continuity Errors. And it seemed that one of the questions he was asked at the Apple store, he kind of alluded to continuity errors in this season. So that might be an insight to what's going on in this season.
Yeah, that's what my take on it as well is, at the Apple store, he may not want to give anything away. And, you know, he said what he said, but maybe there's more to it.
Yeah, well, one of the continuity errors I spotted when we were doing our sort of commentary on the very first one was when he's flying over the City of London, the Big Ben, the clock of Big Ben says something like 9:15, but when he lands in the young girl's garden, the kitchen clock says 8:30. So, I mean, the lots of little ones, but you have a feeling that he's so careful about this sort of thing, that they must be there because of some reveal at some point.
Well, also, one can assume that when he was over London, he was kind of in the midpoint of his flight going back in time from when he left Rose to going back to Amy when she was 8 or 9 years old, whatever her age was. So that could be him going back in time without any indication on screen about that.
It's possible. So did you have any problems with the Dalek redesign?
It is what it is. It's one of the things that they mentioned in The Confidential. They made him taller because the companion's taller so that the companion could look the Dalek in the eye.
Karen Gillan is very tall.
Yes, and she was towering over the older Dalek. And if we remember, the original new series Dalek was designed to be Rose's height, to look into Rose's eye. So I guess that's kind of where they're going with that.
Yeah.
And when we were talking about the eye in the eye stalk, I think the problem with the lighting was it was lit too yellow, so it didn't really look like the white
eye. When watching the actual story, I didn't see it as an organic eye. It looked electronic to me, but it was only The Confidential that I learned that it was supposed to be an organic eye sticking out.
Yeah, and Moffat
has a combination of two.
Yeah, and Moffat has this thing for eyes. It's like we saw that in
Girl in the Fireplace.
Correct, yes. And in the first of this series, The 11th Hour with the attraction.
Yes, that's right. He keeps an eye out for us. Don't blink.
He has an eye for suitcases as well. We had a suitcase in this one with a suitcase in the first one, and we had the boy with a school bag suit sort of case in the middle one. So we've had a case in everyone as well.
All right, so
I thought that this story, the plotting was kind of thin, but there was a lot of stuff in it as far as the historical and you've got the Daleks and you've got Bracewell as having this android to human transformation kind of a la Data. I kind of thought that this episode was more just to set up the new Daleks than to really do anything else as far as the main point of this episode. That's kind of what it left me with. Though as far as a Doctor Who episode, I really enjoyed watching it. It was a lot of eye candy and it really was a lot of fun watching it despite whatever flaws there may be in the thinness of the story.
How many?
But at least in this time, we get back to scheming Daleks, which we haven't seen in a while, where the ordinary Daleks are scheming, kind of like they did back in Power of the Daleks. So that's a good trend, I think.
And so how many TARDIS groans would you give this story?
Well, I don't give groans. Right. So
forgot about that. It's been a while.
I think I've exhausted all the things that I can remember to talk about. So I guess we can
move on.
You didn't hate it. You didn't. It may not. You may not have loved it, but it's somewhere.
Well, I enjoyed it very much. So it was a fun episode to watch. It wasn't as good, I think, as the previous two, but I really thought the previous two were very good. Okay. So,
all right, very good. Thank you again, Taras.
Cheers.
You're welcome. And,
look forward to hearing you next week. Cheers.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right, so we saved the last two are Tims. So two Tims, and we'll give each Tim 2 minutes. First Tim is Mr. Tim Drury. Hello, Tim. Can you hear us?
Oh, sorry, Lou.
Wakey, wakey.
Yeah, well, almost at the point of falling asleep because it's just gone midnight now.
Almost.
Bad boy, Timmy.
And I will answer that as I keep answering recently with my South Park impression. Timmy! On the whole, I like this one better than last week. Good stuff from Churchill. I liked all the stuff with the Jammy Dodger.
Mm-hmm.
So we're collecting Matt Smith food we have to eat while watching Doctor Who, because Matt Smith apparently likes mini eggs. Cadbury's mini eggs and Jammy Dodgers. We're all going to get even fatter. Oh, yes, yes. I don't know if anyone's tried that one yet.
I'm sure people have since the 11th hour. I'm not one of them, but...
I'll join the queue of people lining up to knock the multicoloured Dalek show. They're not like them. They've got big bums now for some reason. And the strange thing on the lower part of the skirt that I couldn't work out what that was for. And some people were trying to defend them by saying that, it's a good nod to the 60s movies, but they were more sensibly done in the 60s movies.
I actually think I saw one nearly tip over in the episode. There's one that definitely, it looks a little bit top-heavy.
Wibbly-wobbly Dalek?
Yeah, wibbly-wobbly Dalek, yeah.
But, somebody pointed out that there seemed less gags in this one, which may have something to do with Mr. Moffat not being behind the scripting this time. But are we doing ratings now?
Give us
as we go around the room. Yeah, 4 out of 5, and very much looking forward to next week's, which I'll have to watch from a hotel room as I'm on my travels next week.
Are you going anywhere in particular?
I'll be in London.
All right. And is there a convention in town?
No, it's just a bit of a trip and a bit of a night out. Good.
Well, have a safe trip, and it's understandable if you can't join us next week, but if we'll hear from you soon.
I should be back in time for this. Right. Might be actually falling asleep next time.
All right. Cheers. Take care.
Cheers, Lou.
All right, last but not least is Mr. The Other Tim. Bunch of Tim Lords here, as opposed to Time Lords. This is, hello, Tim, a longtime Gallifreyan Embassy founding member, going back 25 years now.
Oh, sure, make it seem like just a couple of hours.
Tim was actually only 5 years old when he joined.
Yes. Well, as far as the episode goes, I loved it, but... And I'd love anything Doctor Who, even if it was the worst Doctor Who ever made, which we're not likely to see anytime soon because it would have to be worse than the Gunfighters.
There's some redeeming qualities in the Gunfighters.
Yes, well, there's some redeeming qualities in everything. And the number one is that it's Doctor Who. So, my biggest problem with Doctor Who was the phone call. No one else has mentioned the phone call. The TARDIS having a landline phone just disturbs me no end.
Well, it sort of goes back to
the
Ninth Doctor had was using Rose's mobile phone. He did some hocus pocus on it, and
Ninth and Tenth, they had cell phones.
The Doctor himself says it is a phone box.
Yes, but they didn't have one before. Nobody knew the phone number before.
Well, Gallifrey had the phone number.
No, I don't think it actually has a phone number because it was like a direct line, wasn't it? Like, you know, one between presidents.
It's sort of like the bat phone.
So you don't actually dial it. You basically pick it up and it rings at the other end.
Churchill has a statue. Mm-hmm. He turns the head and there's a switch there that... never mind.
Anyway, the only other problem I had was the Technicolor Dalek storm.
I just lost you there, Tim.
Big and bulky, and the Technicolor Daleks.
Well, you make a good point. I think in the 60s, the reason why they were multicolors was because up in that to that point, you never saw Daleks or Doctor Who in color. Everything was in black and white. So for the film, they wanted to really exploit the color that they were able to do. And that's why, you know, just like many things in the 60s, you go back to even on first color television in the U.S., you know, they changed Star Trek when from the pilot where everything was more gray and silver to now, you know, everything being multicolor, and that's where we got the multicolor uniforms, and that's why red shirts were dying all the time.
Yeah, look out for 3D bumps in the
3D
future.
Bumps might be coming soon.
Ooh, bumps. But I noticed the bulge in the back, but I figured that was just that's where the operator's head had to be or something. The way I see it is that the Daleks don't go for aesthetics, so they wouldn't use color like that. So if they're going to have different colors for different ranks and stuff, they would only need a slight variation in shade. So they would have different color grays, different color white, different color beiges.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Tim.
Yeah.
Well, I think the colors will probably help them in the direction, you know, as far as making Doctor Who, where they can, you know, direct the red Dalek to move here and the white one there or whatever, where in the past, in the old days, they would, in rehearsals, they would put numbers on the Dalek so they would know who was Dalek number two and number three, and they would take directions that way.
It being easier for them to make.
What did you think of the story? How did you like the story? And
story, I love the overall storyline. I love the Doctor being old about the books.
We've
got a crack in the universe, I think.
We're going to wrap things up, Tim. How many TARDIS groans would you give it? We may have lost him. All right. We're not. Unfortunately, Tim, we're not hearing you.
Unless you put it in text very quickly.
Yeah, I think we, for some reason, we lost his audio. He just lost his connection. Well, we do apologize, and unfortunately, there was some problems there. His phone went dead. He was on. Tim was in the queue for so long, and
Churchill was on the other line.
We went on for 2 hours of the show, so his battery just died. Well, we do apologize, and we'll try to keep the show shorter next time. Yeah, right.
Oh, you wimp. You want them this long.
Well, we had a lot of people in the queue this time. So he wrote in chat 3.5 TARDIS groans out of 5. All right, well.
Thanks for that.
Very good. So I think the lowest that this has gotten was 3.5, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 3.
One three, I think.
Okay. Very good. All right, so join us next time. What's the episode title for next week?
Time of Angels. Yeah. And it's the first of a two-parter.
I'm trying to steer away from episode titles as much as I could without getting into spoilery stuff. All right, so same time next week. Thanks again for James and for Ken, who obviously Ken was calling from work and James had to step off. And everyone that called, thank you once again. And we'll be back next time. And the show.
And Kachansky gives it 4.5 out of 5. These are in text. And they're moving. Protopod, 5 out of 5. So they just put themselves very quickly in the text.
Yeah, we had a lot of people in chat as well. So it's a long list of people here. All right, good show.
Oh, 60 out.
Well, thanks, everyone. See you next time. But wait, there's more. That was just the end of the live show. Since we recorded the live show, a couple of people had sent us some recorded feedback for Victory of the Daleks. And first up with that is Michael, the host of the Tin Dog podcast. So let's hear from the Tin Dog himself.
Scanning for audio.
Hi, Lewis. Hi, everyone. This is Michael, host of the Tin Dog podcast. Not wanting to promote my own show here. No, not at all. But I did want a short rant. Yes, Victory of the Daleks is a very good story. Yes, Mark Gatiss is back on form. Yes, the design work is glorious. Yes, all of those lovely things, even the Spitfire and the nice postmodernist references to other war movies, not a problem. Very fond of all those things. Bit worried about the odd Scottish fellow. Does he end up running Torchwood 4? We'll get back to you on that one. All of these things I'm sure I'll talk about and rant about elsewhere. However, the Eye Daleks. Yeah. Someone gives Steve Jobs the job of creating the Daleks. The old Daleks, which could shake a bit, were obviously running Windows 7. The new ones, oh God, they're awful. I can't help it. They're just terrible, terrible monstrosities. Was Raymond Cusack even asked what was going on? Making them taller. Why? They had a Napoleon complex. Now what are they? Lurch? They look hideous. They look like something you'd see at a fairground and your parents would get excited when you were a kid going, look, a Dalek, and you'd look up and go, no, it's not. It's something put together in a garage by an art school project. They are hideous monstrosities and should be stopped. Now, I don't mind if they go on to be the Daleks that are like a queen Dalek that give birth to other Daleks that look like Daleks. These things are awful. Now, I suspect everyone else has said the same thing on the show. So what I'll do is I'll fade away and I'll speak to you all again one day. So until then, be seeing you.
The other mind has now left the Matrix.
Well, thank you, Tin. I mean, thank you. I'm calling you Tin. We just had two Tims on the live show and followed by a Tin. Oh, my. Well, thank you, Michael, from the Tin Dog podcast. And please, you know, don't mince words. If you didn't like, you know, the Daleks, just say so. Well, as always, you can send us your feedback by calling the Doctor Who Podshock public call box at 206-600-6517. And that number is 24 hours a day. It's a voicemail number, so you can just call and leave your feedback there that can be possibly added to the show. So just be aware of that's a 206 area code number in the U.S. That we don't charge you anything for it, but your phone service may, so just be aware of that. Additionally, our feedback email address is feedback@podshock.net, so you can like use your Steve Jobs device. It doesn't have to be an iDalek. It could be an iPhone and or any other smartphone that you can record audio with, and you can record an audio like MP3 or WAV or AIF or whatever, and just email it to us at feedback@podshock.net to get it on the show. We did receive another piece of feedback on, speaking of the Podshock public call box, and this one is from Trevor, and I have to say that it was rather lengthy. It was over 10 minutes, so please, if you do send us feedback, please keep it within 2 to 4 minutes at most, you know, so that it's hard to get everyone's feedback in. So what Trevor did was he reviewed the last 3 episodes in his feedback, but since this is really a review show for Victory of the Daleks, we're just going to go skip ahead to Victory that his since it is a very lengthy feedback, just skip ahead to the last few minutes where he talks about Victory of the Daleks, and we'll try to get his other takes on other shows, other studio shows. So, but let's hear from Trevor now.
And then we get to Victory of the Daleks. Mark Gatiss, normally love Mark Gatiss' stuff, but this doesn't work either. The pacing just seems wrong. It doesn't make sense. We're just it's slapdash almost in some ways. We just sort of jump from one point to the next, and they don't really seem connected well. Again, Amy figures something out that the Doctor can't seem to. That I hear fanboys all the time get absolutely irritated. They're like, "Well, the Doctor's the hero. How come they?" You know, I don't remember that really being that heavy in the RTD series, but in this one, it sure seems like it, because it seems like the doctor tried everything, and, oh, it's just making it worse. The bomb's going to go off faster. Oh, then along comes Amy, and all of a sudden, oh, the bomb's going to stop. You know, woo. Don't get me wrong. It was kind of neat, and it is a neat way to work it out. I did like it in some ways, but I'm waiting for them to get annoyed and go, well, the doctor hasn't solved anything so far except the first one. We'll see. But, you know, do I like the new Daleks? I don't know. I think I'm more interested in the new iPad. But, you know, it's not bad. I guess I also don't like the fact that it sounds like they just sort of did it just to do it. I think that seems kind of pointless. You don't do that. That's not a good way to do things. You don't just change something just for the sake of changing it. You want to have some purpose. You want to have some point. Now, maybe it'll get developed later, and that's great, and that's fine to sort of think that forward, but, you know, I kind of prefer a writer who actually knows where he's going with something rather than a writer who says, well, I'll call it the Eternal. I don't know what it means yet, but I'll figure it out later. And that's, of course, Moffat's comments about them in the Confidential. I mean, it's a neat little piece, admittedly. There's some interesting stuff, but, yeah, it just seems like it's sort of, you know, ripped a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It's hodgepodge. It doesn't really fit. I'm definitely not as taken with I'm not sure that Matt Smith's portrayal of the Doctor in this episode got much better than the Beast Below. It seems like it's like the 11th Hour was great, and then it's just like it's just, he just doesn't seem to know where he's going now. And he's trying. And I think that's – I don't know that that's the fault of the actor. I think that may be part of the writers. I think the writers don't know how to write him yet. And I think that's the problem. I think one of the things that RTD, who always got yelled at for, I think he had a very clear vision of what the Doctor is. And I think, interestingly enough, in this series, Stephen Moffat doesn't have a real clear idea of who the Doctor is. I don't think he's got that down, and I think that's important. I think you need to know that. I think we all believe we know who it is, and the old fans will always kind of hearken back to what they believe it is. But you can't do that in a modern-day series and expect the fans to keep with it. I just don't think it's going to work. So Victory of the Daleks, 2.5 TARDIS groans. It's better than The Beast Below, but not by much. And again, of course, it's a crack thrown at the end, and no real hint at it, although we might at least have had a little more understanding of what it might mean in the fact that Amy Pond doesn't know what the Daleks are. And I guess we'll assume she probably doesn't know what the Cybermen are. So maybe this will get all fleshed out. They've got 10 more episodes, but considering I know the next two are going to be on the whole Weeping Angels, unless they really can figure out how that all ties in, then they're going to be down to 8, and you got to make those connections fast, boys. So anyway, so no, the current season got off to a great start. Too bad it's taken a horrible tumble. Maybe, you know, it's got plenty of time to write itself, though, and we'll see if maybe Moffat and the crew can find a cohesive vision and can sort of pull it out of the nosedive that it's in. Honestly, though, guys, I don't have a lot of faith in it. I have a bad feeling about this, as Han Solo would say. I think that we're in for some very big disappointments this year. But, oh well, we'll see. Cautiously pessimistic. Trevor from Terre Haute, Indiana, signing off.
Well, thank you so much. And just to remind our listeners and others that the series that we're watching right now was shot, what we've seen so far was not shot in order. So actually what we're going into next, The Time of Angels, was actually the first episode or first two episodes that were shot in sequentially. So Matt Smith might be still finding his way as the Doctor. And I don't really, I have to disagree. I think Stephen Moffat knows who the Doctor is. And I think Matt Smith has been doing a fantastic job. I know others disagree with me, and I, you know, respect everyone else's opinions, but I think Matt Smith has really, you know, I think every Doctor finds their way, you know, as the Doctor. And for the most part, if you go back to, all of them, really, for the most part. If you look at their first episode to their last episode, there's been some evolution of their character. You know, going to John Pertwee's Spearhead from Space to Spiders, Planet of the Spiders, to you look at Robot real big difference right there. You go back to just the span of the 7 years of the Tom Baker years, you can see his character has evolved from robot, you know, going on to the Graham Harper years where he's a little bit more slapstick and funny, to the more serious John Nathan Turner, Fourth Doctor. So yeah, definitely there. You know, maybe less so in other cases. We didn't really get to see the Sixth Doctor really mature as he had intended to do over the course of his period, because his period was cut short. We've seen it with the Seventh Doctor, and I'm sure we're going to see it now with the Eleventh Doctor as well. There's going to be, his character is going to mature or evolve as the series goes on. But I do disagree. I think the first three stories have been fantastic for me. I've given, the 11th Doctor, I've gave 5 out of 5, and the last two stories, 4 out of 5. So I think we're in for a fun ride, actually. I'm really enjoying the series thus far. We'll see where it goes. It's still early on. I know Ken is pretty much had given the same ratings so far, if I'm not mistaken, and James as well. Well, we haven't heard James's reviews of the first two yet, but we'll get to that, hopefully, in upcoming Doctor Who Podchalks. Well, that's going to wrap things up for our review of Victory of the Daleks. So be back next time. This is Sunday, the 25th of April, when we review The Time of Angels, at least the first part of that story. For details on that show, please go to our website, thegallifreyanimacy.org or podchalk.net. Both will bring you to the same place. It's our website, and we have posted information about that live show. We're doing it every Sunday, you know, as it's the day after the transmission on BBC One. So hopefully you can join us at one of our live shows reviewing the new episodes. But also be sure to visit our website, thegallifreyanimacy.org or podchalk.net, in between Doctor Who Podchalk episodes, because it's a lively community there in our forums. Plus there's news and information constantly being posted to the site, and there's blogs there as well. So check it out, gallifreyanimacy.org or podchalk.net. When you're not following us on our website, you can follow us on Twitter. You could follow Doctor Who Podchalk on Twitter at twitter.com/Podchalk. You can follow myself on Twitter at twitter.com/Lewis Trapani. And you can follow Dave A.C. Cooper, or Dave Cooper rather, on Twitter at twitter.com/Dave A.C. And as always, if you're joining us on our live show, if you're a Doctor Who Podchalk supporting subscriber, you'll be bumped up in the queue. So please, if you'd like to support us, please go to our website, gallifreyanimacy.org or podchalk.net, and click on the banner on the top which reads Become a Doctor Who Podchalk Supporting Subscriber. Right now, it's the only way we are able to bring you this show for a monthly subscription fee. As a show of support, not only will you be helping us continue and grow the show, but you'll get extra content as well. We just released episode 193, which is an extra show, which continues our coverage of the New York City Doctor Who events, with more from Matt Smith and Karen Gillan. And if you're already a subscriber, thank you for your continued support. Once again, thanks for everyone participating in this show, the live show, as well as people that had sent in their feedback. Until next time, cheers, everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podchalk, presented by the fan-run gallifreyanimacy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podchalk is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podchalk. You can email us at feedback@podchalk.net. Doctor Who Podchalk theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy, and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
The Daleks have won. They beat me, they've won.
But you saved the Earth. Not too shabby, is it?
No, it's not too shabby.
It's a brilliant achievement, my dear friend. Here, have a cigar.